ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। This chapter is describing, after Parikshit Maharaj asked the questions to Sukadev Goswami, Sukadev Goswami started to explain to Parikshit Maharaj. He started to answer his questions. And he pointed out that how important it is to become, how important it is to take to Krishna consciousness. And it is when you get the human form of life, we get a wonderful opportunity, but most of the people just waste that opportunity. They squander that opportunity by just endeavoring for sense gratification. They spend their time arranging for sense gratification during the day and indulging in sense gratification at night. So, and he pointed out how pathetic this loss is. Such a wonderful opportunity to make spiritual advancement and finish off the business, all the businesses in this material nature, and go back to Godhead. One gets this opportunity when he gets the human form of life. In other form, in other species, whether it is lower species or higher species, that opportunity is not so easily available. And what is the way to make the human form of life successful? What is the way to make our life successful? The way is simply to remember Krishna. And especially at the time of death. The goal of life is actually to remember Krishna at the time of death. But during our lifetime, we have to prepare ourselves, we have to practice so that we can remember Krishna at the time of death. If we don't prepare, then we won't be able to remember Krishna at the time of death. It is not that during the lifetime we just waste our life in all kinds of undesirable activities, mundane activities, and do not cultivate this, do not try to remember Krishna. Then, although we may know that at the time of death we should remember Krishna, we won't be able to remember Krishna. Because mind is such a thing that wherever it is absorbed, wherever we put the emphasis, mind will be absorbed in that. If our emphasis is sense gratification, then mind will constantly think of sense gratification. But if the mind is made to remember Krishna, we practice the mind to remember Krishna, then we will be able to remember Krishna. Jai Shri Shri Krishna Balaram ki, Jai Shri Shri Radha Madan Mohan ki, Jai Shri Shri Gaur Nithai ki. That is why one must practice to remember Krishna. And he gave the example of an illustrious king called King Khattanga. King Khatango was a very, very powerful king, and when the demigods were fighting with the demons, then King Khatango was invited to fight with the demigods against the demons. And finally, when the demons were defeated and they were driven out of the heavenly planet, the demigods were so pleased with Khatanga, King Khatanga, that they told him, "Please tell me what you want. We are prepared to give you any benediction." And the demigods can grant such boons. But Khatanga, who was actually a devotee of the Lord, he asked them, "Tell me, how long I'll be alive? For how long my lifespan is?" And they said, "You have one muhurta. You have 96 minutes left." So Kshatra Khatanga just said, "Thank you very much. That's all I wanted to know." So Khatanga came down to the earth planet, and he absorbed himself in thinking about the Supreme Personality of God. And he left his body. So when one leaves his body thinking about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, what happens? He goes back to Godhead. So that is the power, that's the potency of remembering the Lord. If we can just think of the Lord at the time of death, once again, a reminder, before the class starts, switch off your phones or put it in a silent mode. So King Khatanga gave a very beautiful example what we should do. And Sukhdev Goswami reiterated that. So then Sukhdev Goswami pointed out, how should one prepare for death? He actually established, or he advised, the process of Ashtanga Yoga. Ashtanga Yoga is the process of withdrawing the senses from the objects of the senses and fix the mind, meditate on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's the general process. But we don't actually need to follow that process, because Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu simplified the process very much. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "You just surround yourself with the devotees at the time of death. And they'll chant Hare Krishna and create the good fortune for you. Even if you forget to chant Hare Krishna, they will remind you." And we are seeing that. When a devotee leaves his body in the association of devotees, he derives such inconceivable benefit by leaving his body in that way. Like, there have been examples of devotees, some of our God brothers, they left the movement. They fell down miserably. They contacted some very undesirable disease. But when they realized that they are going to now, the life is coming to an end, there is no other opportunity, there is no other possibilities, they contacted the devotees. And the devotees are so kind, they just said, "Yeah, please come back." Although for 10-15 years they didn't have any connection with the devotees. They left the devotees, they left the association, but before dying, when they realized that now they're going to die, they came back to the association of devotees. And they left their bodies in the association, surrounded by devotees, chanting the holy name. And we see, they left their body in such wonderful consciousness. That also proves another point. That Krishna consciousness is never lost. The spiritual advancement that we make is never lost. And when you come back to Krishna consciousness, we become situated at the point where we left. That is a wonderful thing about Krishna consciousness. Neha vikrama nashasti pratyavayana vidyate salpam appasya dharmasya trayate mahato bhayat. Even if we practice a little bit of Krishna consciousness, it will deliver us from the great fear of death. It has also been explained like wherever we end our Krishna consciousness, when we begin from that point. So, even if we go away from the association of devotees, even if we go away from ISKCON, even if we reject the shelter of Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet, even if we submerge ourselves in all kinds of nonsensical activities, but we should make it a point that before we die, we must come back to ISKCON. Of course, it's always better to stay in ISKCON without leaving, but even if you leave ISKCON, if you realize that you're going to die, come back. And ISKCON's door will always be open. ISKCON's door is always open to everyone. And in this way, ISKCON is creating the good fortune for all the living entities. So, do you understand the difference, the point? In other ages, what Sukadeva Goswami was advising, although it was Kali Yuga, Sukadeva Goswami's advice to Parikshit Maharaj was, I'll just go to those points. So, the process that Sukadeva Goswami is prescribing to Parikshit Maharaj, I'll just read that, three verses, and you can consider whether you are fit to follow that process. He is saying, one should leave home and practice self-control. How many of you are prepared to leave home, go to the forest, and practice self-control? How many? Raise your hands. In a sacred place, he should bathe regularly and sit down in a lonely place, duly sanctified. So all by yourself, mind you, when? Just before you're going to leave your body. Not now when you're healthy and strong. When you're going to die, that's the time you have to go to a solitary place, be on the bank of a river, bathe regularly. And then after sitting in the above manner, make the mind remember the three transcendental letters, A, U and Ma, which is Om. And by regulating the breathing process, and by regulating the breathing process, What is the meaning of regulating the breathing process? It means stop breathing. Stop breathing. So regulating the breathing process, control the mind so as not to forget the transcendental seed. What is the transcendental seed? The transcendental seed of Brahma Gayatri is Om. Gradually, as the mind becomes progressively spiritualized, withdraw it from sense activities, and by intelligence, the senses will be controlled. The senses will be controlled, which is pratyahara. That means the senses will be totally withdrawn from the objects of the senses. The mind too, absorbed in material activities, can be engaged in the service of the personality of Godhead and become fixed in full transcendental consciousness. Okay. Thereafter, you should meditate upon the limbs of Vishnu, one after another, without being deviated from the conception of the complete body. Thus the mind becomes free from all sense objects. Thus the mind becomes free from all sense objects. What are the sense objects? Thank you very much. Okay. So the mind should be completely withdrawn from the objects of the senses. What does it mean? The form will be in front of you, but you don't see it. Sound will be there, you don't hear it. Smell will be there, but you don't smell it. Taste will be there, food will be there, but you don't taste it. And object of touch will be there, but you won't perceive it. Actually, the process of yoga is extremely difficult. So, anyway, and that was the process. Now compare it to what is the process that has been given by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Just chant the holy name. Just chant the holy name. Hear the holy name in the association of devotees. Now, Parikshit Maharaj is asking a question to Sukadev Goswami. He asked, O Brahmana, please describe in full detail how and where the mind has to be applied and how the conception can be fixed. How and where the mind should be applied and how the conception should be fixed so that the dirty things in a person's mind can be removed. Then Sukadeva Goswami is explaining. Sukadeva Goswami answered, one should control the sitting posture, regulate the breathing process by yogic pranayama, and thus control the mind and senses, and with intelligence apply the mind to the gross potencies of the Lord called the Virat Rupa. The mind should be fixed on the gross potencies of the Lord, which is the universal form of the Lord. This gigantic manifestation of the phenomenal material world as a whole is the personal body of the Absolute Truth, wherein the universe, resultant past, present and future of material time is experienced. So, the time is experienced in the personality of the universal form. Actually, the universal form of the Lord is synonymous to time. Isn't everything situated in time? Everything is situated in time. H.G. Wells, an English author, he wrote a book called The Time Machine. And the concept actually begins with this concept. Somehow they had some understanding of the Vedic concept. So he actually developed this concept of time machine based on this concept. He is saying that actually things generally are considered to be to have three dimensions, isn't it? Everything has three dimensions. What are the three dimensions? Those three dimensions are length, breadth, and width, right? Everything has three dimensions. But A.G. Wells pointed out the fourth dimension is time. And so everything is existing on time. Like, say, for example, a table is made in 2005, and then the table broke down in 2015, right? So the existence of the table is on time, right? So, and here we can see that concept is not H.G. Wells' concept. This is a Vedic concept. Thousands of years ago, we have this understanding that everything is existing on time. Somebody is born in 1924. Jai Shri Shri Krishna Balaram Ki. Shri Shri Radha Madan Mohan Lalita Vishakha Devi Ki. Jai. Shri Shri Gaur Nitai Ki. Someone is born in 1924 and he died in 1965. What does it mean? His duration was in relation to time. At some point he appeared and at some point he died. He was born at some point and then he died. And this concept applies to every single object, not only living. Even inert objects are also relative to time. So he pointed out that one must remember the universal or Virat Roop of the Lord, universal form of the Virat Roop of the Lord, and thus he recognized that that form is actually the form of time. The gigantic universal form of the personality of Godhead within the body of the universal shell, which is covered by sevenfold material elements, is subject for the Virat conception. What are the seven folds of material concept, material nature? The covering of the sevenfold material elements. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, and mahatattva. 5, 6, 7. But there is the eighth covering also. What's the eighth covering? The eighth covering is the covering of Maya. So, then, person who have realized it, have studied, that the planets known as Patala constitute the bottoms of the feet of the universal Lord. And the heel and the toe are the Rasatala planet. The ankles are Mahatala planet. And his shanks constitute the Talatal planet. The knees of the universal form are the planetary system of the name Sutala, and two thighs are the Bitala and Atala planetary system. The hips are Mahitala, and other space is the depression of his, and the outer space is the depression of his navel. So, there are seven lower planetary systems there: Atal, Bital, Sutal, then Mahatal, Rasatal, and Patal. And above that is Tal, or here it has been described as Mahital. Mahital, Atal, Bital, Sutal, Mahatal, Rasatal, and Patala, the seven lower planetary systems. The chest of the original, under his depression, the outer space is the depression of his navel. The chest of the original personality of the gigantic form is a luminary planetary system. His neck is the Mahar planet. His mouth is the Jana planet. And his forehead is the topper planet. The topmost planetary system, known as Satyaloka, is the head of he who has 1,000 heads. So who has 1,000 heads? That is the form of Mahavishnu, who has been described in Purusha Sukta as Sahasra Shisha Purusha. Sahasra means 1,000. So he is the Purusha with 1,000 heads. So here it has been described that the upper planetary, six upper planetary systems above the Earth planet is those six planetary systems are beyond this Earth planet is Bhubarloka and Swarloka. Those two has been covered as the luminaries, the luminary planetary systems is his chest. Beyond that is Maharloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka and Satyaloka. Maharloka is his neck, Janaloka is his mouth, Tapaloka is his forehead, and Satyaloka is his head. This is the universal form of the Lord. The entire body of the Lord has been described in this way. His arms are the demigods headed by Indra. The ten directional sides are his ears. And physical sound is his sense of hearing. His nostrils are the two Ashwini Kumars. And material fragrance is his sense of smell. His mouth is the blazing fire. The sphere of outer space constitutes his eyepiece. And the eyeball is the sun as the power of seeing. His eyelids are both the day and night. And in the movements of his eyebrows, the Brahma and similar supreme personalities reside. His planet is the director of water, Varuna. His palate is the His palate is the director of water, Varuna, and the juice or essence of everything is his tongue. They say that the Vedic hymns are the cerebral passage of the Lord, and his jaws of teeth are Yama, god of death, who punishes the sinners. The art of affection is his set of teeth. And the most alluring illusory material energy is his smile. This great ocean of material creation is but the casting of his glands over us. Modesty is the upper portion of his lips. Hankering is his chin. Religion is the breast of the Lord, and irreligion is his back. Brahmaji, who generates all living beings in the material world, is his genitals, and the Mitra Varunas are his two testicles. The ocean is his waist, and the hills and mountains are the stacks of his bones. O King, the rivers are the veins of the gigantic body, the trees are the hairs of his body, and the omnipotent air is his breath. The passing ages are his movements, and his activities are the reactions of the three modes of material nature. O best among Kurus, the clouds which carry water are the hairs of his head. The terminations of days and nights are his dress. And the supreme cause of material creation is his intelligence. His mind is the moon, the reservoir of all changes. The principle of matter, Mahat Tattva, is the consciousness of the omnipresent Lord as asserted by the experts, and Rudradev is his ego. The horse, mule, camel, and elephants are his nails, and wild animals and all quadrupeds are situated in the belt zone of the Lord. Varieties of birds are indications of his masterful artistic sense. Varieties of birds are indications of his masterful artistic sense, because they're so beautiful. Manu, the father of mankind, is the emblem of his standard intelligence, and humanity is his residence. The celestial species of human beings, like the Gandharvas, Vidyadharas, Charanas, and angels, all represent his musical rhythm, and the demoniac soldiers are representations of his wonderful prowess. The Virat Purusha's face is the Brahmana's. His arms are the Kshatriya's. His thighs are the Vaishya's. And the Sudras are under the protection of his feet. All the worshipable demigods are also overtaken by him. And it is the duty of everyone to perform sacrifices with feasible goods to appease the Lord. I have thus explained to you the gross, material, gigantic conception of the personality of Godhead. One who seriously desires liberation concentrates his mind on this form of the Lord, because there is nothing more than this in the material world. One should concentrate his mind upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who alone distributes himself in so many manifestations, just as ordinary persons create thousands of manifestations in dreams. One must concentrate the mind on him, the only all-blissful absolute truth. Otherwise, one will be misled and will cause his own degradation. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purports of the second canto, first chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The First Step in God Realization. So he is advising Parikshit Maharaj to meditate upon the universal form of the Lord after practicing yoga. And actually he is pointing out that this is the stage of Pratyahara. By meditating upon the universal form of the Lord, one actually is able to withdraw his senses from the objects of the senses. So I'll stop now, and then it will be interesting to see what Parikshit Maharaj had to say to that. At least we can understand that for us, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu made the process a lot easier. What do the devotees have to do? As I was mentioning, even though a devotee is not very fixed up, even though the devotee may be weak, even though the devotee may be completely diseased and in a very, very pathetic state of existence, just by remembering the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we can make our life successful. And what to speak of those who have practiced the process. We have seen such glorious departures of simple devotees. Such simple devotees. In this respect, I often mention two such glorious departures. I'll just briefly mention them. One is a lady devotee from England. Many of you probably know of her. She is the mother of Janava. And yes, the wife of Lila Purushottam. She was a simple lady. Lila Purushottam will confirm. She was a very simple lady. But very, very, very devoted, very devotionally inclined. And she was not a big stalwart devotee of her movement. She was not very learned or scholarly. But she was a simple-hearted devotee. And she... It was detected that she got cancer, and the doctor gave her some time, about 2-3 months. But she stayed for over a year, yeah? Lila Purushottam, more than a year she after they detected that. And not only that, she came back to Mayapur. She came to Mayapur. And she liked it so much in Mayapur that she didn't want to leave Mayapur. At that time I was in America, so I received a phone call that they were asking me to convince her to go back to London for the treatment, because in India the treatment facility was not as good as in London. So she had to go back for her treatment. So anyway, I spoke to her, and she agreed to go back to London. And but then her condition deteriorated. From time to time I used to speak to her, and then one day I was told that the doctor said that she has only about a week at the most. And it was towards the end of July. I was in America, I was in New Vrindavan, and we were actually shooting Abhaycharan there at that time. So I was speaking to her and she told me that the night before, she had a dream that I came to see her. So when I heard that, I decided that I must go. So I dropped everything. In one day, I just arranged the flight and I came to London. And I thought she has only about 1 week, so she must be completely bedridden. And so when I landed, they arranged that I would go take some rest and then come to see her in the afternoon. I landed in the morning in London. So I came to see her, so I'll go straight to her. So I just, from the airport straight, I went to her house. And as I mentioned, I was expecting that she'd be completely bedridden and all. But when I went there, she just got out of her bed, and in spite of my repeated request not to do that, she offered me obeisances. She got out of the bed and offered obeisances. And anyway, so her spirit was so high. And actually, clinically, they cannot understand that how one can behave like that. Like, her condition was supposed to be so weak. I mean, she wouldn't have any strength to even move on to her side, but she just, she insisted on getting down, getting out of the bed and offer obeisances. And that was 28th of July. And she stayed for another 3 weeks. August 21st, she left her body. And you know how she left her body? She had her bead bag in her hand. She was chanting. And just before leaving her body, she lifted the bead bag, put the bead bag on her head, and she left her body. Now tell me where she went. Now, only a devotee can leave her body in such a glorious way. Because generally, as you all know, when one leaves his body or her body, just lies flat on the bed and arms are on the side. You can still see her picture. I think I have a picture of her. And her head is tilted on the side. Her hand is on her, on the bead bag, touching her head. Another glorious departure is also a girl. She was only about 21 years old, a very sweet young girl. She was a disciple of His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj. I knew her since she was about 15, 16. She was so full of life. She used to live in Pune with her parents. And I mean, she was such a wonderful girl, very sweet, very full of life, and little mischievous. And mischievous in the sense, you know, she would just do some, you know, like be a little naughty at times, you know, all in a very playful manner. And one day she became sick, and it was detected that she has developed some disease of the stomach which doesn't have any cure. Allopathic treatment didn't have any cure, some homeopathic treatment, Ayurvedic treatment didn't also have any effect, and eventually some homeopathic treatment had some effect, but then her condition improved a little. But I noticed a remarkable change in her. The girl who was so full of life and so full of vitality, I noticed that she became so grave and so calm and composed. And one day I was talking to her, and she was telling that she is not afraid of dying. She knows, she's telling me that she knew that she's going to die, and she doesn't have very much longer to live, but she's not afraid of dying. And I saw a remarkable change in her. She became so composed, so peaceful, so... And then she sat for her exam, she did her graduation, she went through her tests, exams, and her condition improved quite a lot, actually. Then her result was very good. She came home, gave the good news to her mother, and then she developed some stomach ache. She collapsed. She was immediately rushed to the hospital, and the doctor said that the internal hemorrhage, internal bleeding has started, and there's nothing they can do. And so she was in the intensive care, and she was unconscious. And then she came back to her. When she came back to her, when she gained consciousness, she found herself in with all these tubes and things, needles in her body, giving oxygen, giving intravenous feeding and intravenous medicine. And she just told them to take all that off. And she just asked everyone to chant the holy name. It was just before she left her body. She asked them to remove all these tubes and all these needles. And she asked them, the devotees were there, she asked them to chant the holy name of the Lord. And she herself was chanting. And in this way she left her body. Just a 21-year-old girl. Now these are the proofs of the effectivity of Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is not just some words. Krishna consciousness is a practically proven scientific process. It's the art of dying. Krishna consciousness teaches us how to leave our body, how to die. And by dying in this way, we achieve immortality. Dying in this way, we conquer death and receive eternal life. There are many other such examples, but these two examples are so wonderful that often I mention about these two glorious examples of the validity, the authenticity of Krishna consciousness. Gaur Premanande Hari Hari Bo Jagat Guru Srila Prabhupada Ki Sri Sri Radha Madan Mohan Ki Jai Sri Sri Krishna Balaram Ki Jai Sri Sri Gaur Nitai Ki Jai Samaveto Bhakta Vrind Ki Jai Gaur Premanande. So I won't invite any question today. It's already 9 o'clock and I have a very busy day today. So, you also have a very busy day today. So, thank you all very much. All glories to Shiva.